Welcome to The Wrap, a Warren Averett podcast for business leaders designed to help you access vital business information and trends when you need it so you can listen, learn, and then get on with your day. Time is tight. That's why our advisors have wrapped up today's most timely topics into a podcast with actionable advice. Now, let's get down to business.
Hey, Kim.
Hey, Paul.
How are you doing?
I'm good. We're still working remotely.
We are, and we're still doing our podcast remotely. It's good to be back. Looking forward to this season of conversation.
Yeah. So, you know, our listeners know that we spent the last couple of months addressing some top issues that we felt like our clients and business owners were dealing with out of the COVID-19 pandemic. And now we're ready to start a new season of The Wrap. And this season, we are going to focus on conversations with business owners and really addressing how they, you know, were affected by COVID-19 and how their companies responded. So I think we're going to have some really good conversations, and I'm very excited about it and super excited about the episode one and the guest that we have today.
Absolutely. This to me is a follow-up to those special series where, you know, we talked a little bit about what folks were going to be doing and how they were going to handle business. And now we're going to get to actually listen to some business owners and how they were impacted. And so our first guest is Ferris Malky, is the owner and operator of Cahaba Cycles here in Birmingham. And with Ferris today is Josh Reitinger with our asset management group. I know Ferris and Josh have known each other for quite some time. So this should be a really good conversation. Guys, we're looking forward to having y'all with us today.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Kim and Paul. I'm excited to be here.
So Ferris, let's start with you just telling us a little bit about your business and your company's mission.
Sure. So we at Cahaba Cycles believe that the bicycle is a solution to many of the challenges we face today, including obesity and heart disease, traffic congestion, pollution, the negative effects of a lot of screen time. And so our goal was really to get as many people on bikes as possible, because we really believe that it improves lives. We are a bicycle retail company. We have four locations in Birmingham. I've been around since 1982, 30 employees. We do pretty much everything related to the bicycle, including service, which is about 20 to 25% of our business. We are. We also have a substantial web and digital presence. And that's the gist of who we are and what we do.
And I will say that I was, when I first got into cycling, I went to Cahaba Cycles, and I think it was your father that I actually bought the bike from, and, got into it and helped me understand what I needed to know. And it was just, you know, the service part, like you talked about, has always been wonderful. And, during pandemic, I got all my kids riding bikes, got all the training wheels off. And so it was kind of nice to get out and out of the house and somewhere somewhat safe. And so been enjoying that during this time. But as we think about this pandemic, you know, at the beginning of 2020, how prepared was your business to address what was to come?
Well, I will tell you, there's a lot of threats and challenges that I think about for our business. Internet pressure and competition, you know, from internet retailers has always been a big one. Big box retail has always been a challenge for us. Hiring and retaining quality employees, especially in an economy that's been thriving, has been a real challenge. Rising costs, shrinking margins, I mean, all these things that we constantly evaluate and try to overcome. But I'll be honest, a pandemic was not on my radar. Maybe it should have been. We quickly had to kind of get our bearings and pivot when everything hit in mid-March. I'd like to say that we were, you know, probably not knowing it, had been preparing for this over the past couple of years in a couple of different areas of the business, optimizing our digital presence, increasing our web traffic, and getting more, e-commerce sales has been a big focus. And then cleaning up our bookkeeping and our kind of financial processes was something we were that I was trying to hone in on and improve. And then really getting our service departments to be more efficient and being able to turn work faster and being, you know, having a lot more organized process in the back. So those were some areas that we were really focusing on that, you know, I'm glad I was focusing on and improving kind of incrementally over the past couple of years, because when this hit, we had such a tremendous upswing in activity that if we weren't prepared and didn't have those systems in place, it would have been pretty painful. So the other side of it is, you know, our entire sales process had to change because we immediately moved to curbside, which is in itself a tremendous challenge. So the sales training that we've been doing over the past couple of years really prepared our folks to, you know, quickly assess the customer, figure out what they needed and how we could help, and then deliver the right product amidst, you know, a lot of barriers, frankly, curbside and inventory shortages and, you know, tremendous call volume. And it was a challenge, but I feel like we were prepared for it.
So Ferris, I don't think it's any, you know, doubt that everyone who is now staying at home is being more active. And I know in my neighborhood, people are out and about all day, you know, walking, riding their bikes. Kids are out because they're not in school. And so I can imagine that you saw a, you know, significant increase in demand for your products. But how else has COVID-19 really impacted your business?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think at first, you know, everything happened really quickly. So, I mean, we all dealt with that, right? Like one day it's business as usual. The next day, are we going to be open tomorrow? And we kind of stayed in that spot for about 3 or 4 days. And when Jefferson County released their sort of guidelines on who is open and who is not, I couldn't tell whether we were in that group of being able to stay open or not. There was nothing, just said nothing about bike shops. Nobody did across the entire country, governors, local authorities. So we kind of had to figure out, like, you know, where do we sit in all this? So I called Jefferson County Health Department for about 3 days, could not get a hold of anybody. Finally got hold of someone and I said, look, this is who I am. This is my business. Can we remain open? What do we do? And she said, you are in the same category as auto repair and appliance repair. Therefore, you can remain open. So at that point, I said, okay, there's my answer. I didn't have any official documentation or anything. So we just immediately moved to curbside just because we, you know, obviously felt it wasn't right to, or, and didn't feel safe letting customers in the store. You know, I think our initial reaction was, okay, let's try this, see how it goes. I mean, I stopped buying inventory. I told my buyer, like, don't buy another thing. I don't know how this is going to go. We started prioritizing our bills and invoices and really came up with a plan really quickly of how to save cash. But within about 3 or 4 days, we realized that we were in an anomaly situation where we were seeing extremely high demand and very quickly. So we were bringing in repairs by the dozens per hour. I mean, it was we were quickly running out of space to even bring repairs in. So at that point, and at the same time, we were getting, you know, new bike purchases. So just like you mentioned, there's limited things you can do, right? You can't go anywhere, but you can spend time with your family and get some exercise. And, you know, Junior learns how to ride a bike. I mean, your story, Paul, is like, I've probably heard that 150 times. It's a beautiful story. And I had that same situation in my own family. You know, it's like my 6-year-old really learned how to ride really well. And we just spent a ton of time on bikes. Of course, I was working a tremendous amount too, but I went from sort of a panic, wow, how are we going to handle all this business? But also saw a tremendous opportunity. People were hurting and afraid, didn't know what to do, but the bike is a really great activity. And it kept, I think we had a role to really try to keep people healthy, not just physically, but probably mentally, and helping them have good family experiences through all of this. So we've tried to keep that same attitude. It's a really great opportunity to keep the community moving and serving them through all this.
You know, one of the things I think that all of that demand and everybody using bikes more now, is it's going to show the infrastructure to handle where we can ride bikes safely, right, with kids. We're going to now see a need for more trails like we have around town and other folks have around town. I just found the nearest church that nobody was at, and I used their parking lot, right? It was one of those big mega churches, and there was a lot of space and it was safe. There were no cars around, and that's where we had to go ride the bikes. And so I imagine the next thing is, how do we increase the infrastructure for folks who want to continue riding bikes when this is all over?
That's a great point. And I think, what I've been thinking is, if just a percentage of this participation sticks, even if it's 25-30% and people continue to use the bicycle as they are now, I mean, we're going to see a tremendous upswing, and it's going to necessitate having bike lanes, bike infrastructure, like you're saying, and maybe this is just the catalyst. I'm hoping this is the catalyst that our governments need to see to actually put these things in place and allow people to, ride bikes in a safe place. I'm thinking more, we have our enthusiast crowd. They're going to ride no matter what on any road and on trails and whatnot. But what we're really focused on is just getting the families out riding together. And I'm hoping that some more infrastructure will stem from all of this.
So Josh, kind of, if you don't mind jumping in, how does this business's situation align with kind of a view of industry and business that's been impacted that you've seen?
Well, I think retail gets lumped together a lot, and you, just like a lot of industries, I think that's always a little bit short-sighted to kind of lump everything together. And everybody has challenges in this world that we found ourselves in over the past 3 months, but different retail has had different challenges, and some have had some really interesting opportunities that have come along. So I think in general, retail has been one of the most negatively impacted, broad areas of the economy. But it's interesting to hear when Ferris talks about Cahaba Cycles, how it moved very quickly in the matter of 3 or 4 days when they were deemed to be an essential business, and how quickly they had to respond. And when I think about that, and I think about businesses, what I've heard from some other business owners that might have been in like the outdoor space, specialty outdoors and that sort of area too, that have also been deemed essential, they've all had some serious, serious challenges in terms of inventory management, their workforce, because quite frankly, some of their employees may have been able to do better by collecting the extra $600 a week of unemployment. And then that's going away. So how do you bring those employees back on? I mean, how do you deal with things like the telephone ringing and also having an internet presence? And it's been really fascinating to watch businesses like Cahaba really pivot really, really fast. But part of the reason that they've been able to be successful both leading up to this and during this time is they've had this high, high standard on service and not just upon a commodity. Because if it's just on a commodity, then you can go pick that up in a lot of different places and a lot of different venues. And it's been really fascinating to watch these businesses do very, very well that have been focused on a high level of service, even though they've had unique challenges like they've never had before.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
So Ferris, what adaptations has Cahaba Cycles made, and maybe even for other B2B companies that are listening, maybe what have you seen your customers make, but in an attempt to adapt during this pandemic? You talked a little bit about it, like the immediate switch to curbside, but maybe what other adaptations are you seeing either you make or your customers make?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think one of our biggest early adaptations was finding other suppliers that could fulfill our needs. We do about 65-70% of our business with one supplier. That supplier is Trek. They have a really large breadth of bikes and parts and accessories. So you know, in the past, dealing with one supplier that has really good processes and really good fulfillment rates, has always been the preferred way to do business. And we've got a really strong relationship there. But we've always known, and I've always kind of in the back of my mind, you know, what would happen if something, you know, if that relationship went sour or whatever, what kind of position are we going to be in? So we've always had other suppliers, you know, had good relationships with other suppliers. So we had to really call on those other ones quickly. And, cause Trek actually ran out of everything quicker than the others, but now they're backfilling a lot quicker than everybody else as well. But we were able to pick up, four or five other brands and fill some of these gaps. So, having, you know, strong credit, if you will, plenty of cash, the ability to just pivot to other suppliers and say, hey, we need a bunch of stuff, you know, sell it to us, please. You know, they didn't question whether we could pay for it or not. So that was nice. Our internet business went up tremendously as well. And that was another area where, as far as our infrastructure, we were ready. The actual day-to-day operational part of it was a huge challenge and still continues to be, because we do some online business, but not nearly as much as we're doing now. So we weren't really prepared for that sort of volume. You know, our business is really dependent on what we really focus on, like, you know, service levels. When you come in, you get, it's unlike most other retail. It's very consultative. It's one-on-one. We listen a lot. We have product for you to try and touch and feel. That's where we've always focused. But we've also tried to grow the internet side. But we basically took that whole model that we've normally been doing, where customers come in, we make them feel welcome, we take them through the whole process. We couldn't really do that anymore. Now they want to do it online or on the phone, which is very clunky, you know, if you will, to try to replicate that service level. So we had to change our website a lot, have some good information where they could determine quickly, like, for instance, what size bike do I ride? Well, when you come in, we can quickly size you up. And that's, you know, it's a 20-second conversation in person. Over the phone and on the website, it's a little bit more difficult. I mean, there's size charts and stuff, but it's, you know, it's not that cut and dry. So we had to alter our website to deliver answers to some of those questions to customers really quickly. So that's another way we had to really adapt and change there. As far as work order take-in or repair business, we had to have an extra person sort of trying to manage the flow of repairs in. So kind of an intermediate person in addition to our normal service advisor who checks in all our work. So having said that, you know, we didn't have a lot of resources because we didn't have a huge staff to begin with. We never have. We run pretty lean. And then we did have a little bit of loss. Just we had a few employees who, you know, weren't ready to be in a environment that was a bit risky, right? So we had a few people that sat out. So those were things that we had to adapt around. And just frankly, everybody just worked really hard. It's still working very hard to get everything taken care of.
So Ferris, you've been talking a lot about how your business has run during this pandemic. You've got to actually run the business from a people side, right? Internal HR side, your employee perspective. What challenges did you face on that side of the business?
Yeah. So there's this whole other subjective or softer side of managing during this period. I mean, in addition to the tangible things like, you know, inadequate inventory supply and high demand, a little bit limited staff, running curbside, all those are really big challenges themselves. But then there's the whole keeping the staff intact. And because there's a legitimate fear of being at work and being around lots of people, you're having to confront people all day, the fear of getting sick, really. And we knew, and we're still, I mean, nothing's really changed. I mean, we're still in that period of, you know, this thing is not gone by any means. Could be ramping back up, sounds like, maybe. But the fear of getting sick or somebody in our organization getting sick and then, you know, we have to just close down. I mean, that fear is still there. And so it was my job to kind of listen to the staff, let them lead as far as, you know, how do you want to handle the customer flow? And, you know, what do you think are reasonable hours to where we can continue to operate and everybody still, you know, keep their sanity and not be completely exhausted? So that was a hard thing to sort of manage. And on top of that, just like everybody's experiencing, you know, CDC is saying sanitize your hands and wear face masks. Well, like there's no supplies to purchase. So yeah, we'd love to have lots of hand sanitizer at each entrance, but couldn't get it. Couldn't, you know, sterilize the bikes before you hand them to people, sterilize your product. Well, that sounds great, but you know, we couldn't come up with supplies there for a couple of weeks. It was pretty nerve-wracking actually. So in addition to all these stresses of dealing with all these things, you know, there's just the feeling of being kind of the whole fear of getting sick all day and touching things that may have the virus on them was really stressful. Anybody who's continued to stay open through this can relate to that. And really, we're all still, you know, dealing with that as well. You know, we didn't have anyone who said, you know what, I'm going to take my $600 a week and stay home. The people who didn't work were either, they just, you know, essentially took some time off for themselves. But, you know, I was really happy with that. I was really proud of my team to stick in there and really continue to work. And, you know, I'd like to think that over the years we've cultivated a culture of really caring about our employees and trying to meet their needs. So that was a big fear at the beginning. So far, everybody's still on board and we're continuing to do well. The other challenge that I didn't really talk about is we didn't meet every customer's needs, and we did have some upset customers and we had some conflicts and hasn't been smooth by any means. But I think most of our customer base has been extremely just understanding and patient, and that's really made it easier. And, you know, we really appreciate our customers and kind of hanging in there with us and understanding that the, you know, the difficult we're going through and meeting everybody's needs. So that's been a really nice kind of side benefit or silver lining, if you will, is, you know, we've kind of solidified a lot of our customer relationships and, you know, I think we've really appreciate them now even more so that they've kind of hung with us through all this.
So Josh, this, you know, story is, there's maybe some specifics that are unique to Cahaba Cycles, but the, you know, the impact a company is dealing with from COVID-19, whether it's supply chain or HR issues, is not unique in that there are a lot of businesses that have been impacted. So what insight do you think other businesses can glean from Farish sharing how, you know, the story from Cahaba Cycles?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the COVID-19, now obviously it's affected everybody's business, but it magnified some of the issues that were already at play. I mean, you mentioned supply chain, you mentioned employees and labor force, and they're nuanced and slightly different right now, but those kind of major issues were really already kind of there. This just kind of threw gasoline on an already fairly small fire. So I think that's part of it. And really what Cahaba was doing is they were already working really hard on their business. And if you could have been a part of some of the conversations that Farish and I've had over the past really 5 years or so, although he may not have seen the threat of a pandemic, obviously, happening, you know, at the beginning of this year, he was really preparing for that and preparing his business for that. And I think that's one of the hard things in strategic planning is that it's pretty easy to identify what your strengths are, fairly easy to look at your weaknesses. And for the most part, you can see the opportunities that are out there. The threats are always the hardest. And you could plan for years and years and years and not identify all the different threats. But if you go through and you do really good work, then you can identify some of these things that will happen to your business when a situation like a pandemic or whatever it might be, whatever the next thing is, will actually happen. And I think that's part of the reason that Cahaba has been able to do fairly well through this period of time, is they were preparing for it and they just didn't even know that they were actually preparing for it. And then secondly, I look at what, and as I even hear Ferris talk more today, they pivoted extremely fast. And I think in our world today, this isn't just a COVID-19 issue. I think for business owners, increasingly, if you want to remain relevant, especially now, is you've got to be able to pivot very, very fast. And not just sit back and say, well, once I have more information, I'll make a decision on this or wait. It is really going to be, you've got to assess a situation that's very difficult, that has all kinds of risk around it, and then be able to make a decision very fast and then go execute. And I think that's probably one of the things that business owners I see struggle with the most, and that's been magnified during this period of time. And then the third thing that Kahava Cycles did through this period of time is they listened to their employees. They had, Ferris mentioned the culture of Kahava Cycles. It is entrenched. It has been there for decades, and their employees were completely bought into that culture. But that didn't mean that you can't, or that you shouldn't listen to them during this period of time. As busy as they were, they still stopped to listen to their employees, listen to their concerns about whether or not they felt safe coming into the office or to the bike shop. What their concerns were and how they dealt with a huge need for their employees. And so I think those are things that we should all be doing in our businesses regardless of this pandemic, but it just really, really is important during this period of time to be doing this.
So Ferris and Josh, here on The Wrap, we always like to end each episode by asking our guest, you know, in 60 seconds or less, what would be the main takeaway that you would hope our listeners would leave with? You know, what one piece of advice would you want them to leave with after hearing this?
Yeah, I think I could probably trim that down to just three things. Of course, I'm still learning and trying to figure out, you know, what we have learned from all this. But I think the first one is just anybody who has a supply chain that they depend on, you know, having a plan B and even a plan C, and not getting too involved in one supplier. I think that would be a piece of advice. Just cause like what Josh said, I mean, you never know what's next, and having a lot of people on your team is always important. Another thing I learned would be, just managing a team and sometimes I think it's important to let your team lead. The leaders in your organization, they're the ones on the front lines. They're the ones dealing with customers. You know, really listening with some empathy and hearing what their concerns are, and then making decisions off of that. Ultimately, you want happy customers for sure. But if your employees aren't happy and aren't feeling safe at work, then none of it works. So I really tried to do just that, listen and kind of let them lead through this, you know, really tough time. And then lastly, I think one thing we've had to learn is like clear messaging to your customers and your employees with a really clear and concise plan, just helps, you know, keep everything stable, especially in an environment like we're in now.
Yeah, Kim, you know, it's hard to wrap this up in 60 seconds, but a couple of things that really jump out at me for businesses. I think one of the things I think is probably the most important thing for a business to be working on all the time is culture. Culture is the most important thing. Everything flows out of culture. And if you talk to businesses during this very, very difficult time, the ones who seem to have been successful are ones that have had strong cultures. And we knew that coming into this. We know it now more than ever. So businesses, I think, are going to be tempted to go in and get very granular. And that's important. But if they're not working on their culture at a high level first, then all of these small, rather granular issues, it won't work. And so that would be the first thing. The second thing quickly would be that you need a strategic plan, and you better be executing on that plan, but you better be willing to toss that plan out the window. that, because depending on a situation like this, it may not be all that informative, but all the work that you did on that plan, if it was well done, it will prepare you to go through a threat like COVID-19. So those are two things that I think businesses could probably work on, and it will pay dividends for them for a long, long time.
Thanks so much, Ferris and Josh. I mean, I think that there's a lot of business owners that maybe they didn't have the exact same experience the last couple of months as you did, but there are some key learnings from this conversation that I think, you know, any business owner could take away and be ready to, you know, kind of look in the mirror and ask those same questions of themselves to figure out, you know, how would I be able to answer these questions, and was I as prepared as I needed to, and what can I learn for the next thing, whatever that is. You know, it may not be a global pandemic, but there's going to be disruption in our businesses going forward for sure. So thank you so much, Ferris, for your time and for joining us.
Well, thank you all very much. I enjoyed it, and I'll definitely be tuning into the next podcast. This is great. I'll be looking for.
Who knew accountants could be entertaining?
Yeah, that's right. Who said we are, Kim?
We think we are.
I think you are. You know, come on.
And that's a wrap. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review on your streaming platform. To check out more episodes, subscribe to our podcast series, or make a suggestion for other topics to cover, visit us at warrenaverett.com/thewrap.